There's this idealized image of the future of autonomous vehicles seamlessly zipping us from point A to point B while we read a book or watch a movie. But we have a ways to go before we achieve that utopian vision. Last year, for instance, a pedestrian was struck and killed by an autonomous vehicle that was being tested in Phoenix by Uber. And a recent study from the Georgia Institute of Technology finds a potential risk with these self-driving vehicles. They may be better at sensing and detecting pedestrians with lighter skin tones. All of this has researchers looking for ways to make autonomous vehicles safer. Researchers like my guest, Walter Lisecki, Assistant Professor of Computer Science and Engineering at the University of Michigan. Welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
So you're working on a project that combines human and artificial intelligence in autonomous vehicles. What is the driving question or problem behind your research?
Well, so as we know, driving is extremely dangerous, right? And yet, at the same time, it's not something that we can, like smoking, for instance, just tell people to stop doing, because it's incredibly important for our productivity, for our happiness. So instead, we're thinking of this as more of a holistic system. So you already have drivers in the car, right?
Uh-huh.
And when you have these humans that are part of this process already, what we want to be able to do is combine what they know about what's going on around them potentially, or what they understand from a scene, in a way that allows us to get over these little failure points in autonomy. So right now, we're not going to have fully autonomous vehicles, as you mentioned. So instead of just saying we will wait until the system is perfect, we want to deploy something that is both effective but also as safe as possible. So we're trying to hand off the moment-to-moment control of a vehicle that may suddenly switch from autonomous mode to help, I need help from a human driver, without necessarily requiring the person in the car to be that respondent.
Okay, because we know if you're just driving on a uncrowded road and there's not much going on, we're probably pretty much there. The car can handle that. It's the, oh my word,
exactly.
These exceptional moments. And so you're trying to figure out a way to keep things safe there. And when you think about there are certainly a number of levels between me being completely in control and driving and me reading a book or taking a nap while
right.
This autonomous vehicle does all the driving. So you know, where are we now as far as the gradation, the levels?
Right. So there is kind of a formal specification of these different levels of autonomy that they have in autonomous vehicle research. Going from level zero, so there's six levels. You're going from level zero, which is none at all.
Which is my daily drive, an hour and a half each way. So
exactly.
That's the none at all.
No, that's the none at all. You know, and that slowly moves up towards things like cruise control. So level one would be simple control of part of the driving experience. So cruise control allows you to not worry about the exact pressure that you're putting on the pedal in order to maintain a speed, and you can just steer the car. What's new is level two, where we're starting to look at essentially fancy cruise control. We can take over more than just one element of control of the car. This is what you see in GM's Super Cruise or Tesla's Autopilot, right? Where you can actually take your hands off of the wheel and the car will navigate itself for short periods of time, but you're expected to be kind of hovering over at all times to make sure it's doing the right thing. That continues to progress, you know, get more and more automated as we hit level three, which focuses on driverless autonomy of the car, but you're still supposed to have a driver paying attention to the road. Because while you don't need to be moment to moment waiting for something to go wrong, when the car realizes that it doesn't know what to do, it's going to hand back control. Mm-hmm. And of course, critical events on the road might happen with only a couple seconds of lead time. I realize something entered the lane. I don't know what it is as the autonomous vehicle. And so immediately we just pop back control to the human. Of course,
can I ask if that's where the Uber car in the Uber test car in Phoenix was at?
Yeah, so it was somewhere between kind of
two and three. Okay.
Yeah. The problem that it was mostly that they were testing it in kind of a level three mode, but the human driver wasn't paying attention. Mm-hmm. Right. So they weren't able to intervene when there was a problem. There's some evidence that they did have an unknown object entering the road. And that turned out, unfortunately, to be a person, and the car did not account for that.
Okay. Then moving up to level four.
So level four is you really can stop paying attention to the road, but only in certain scenarios. So when you get on the highway, you know, you can climb in the back seat for a nap is the dream anyway of level four, okay. But only on the highway. So you can't handle other scenarios. It might be only on the highway when, you know, it's sunny outside and the weather's good and no other complications come online. And then five is kind of the ultimate dream of self-driver cars. We can uninstall the steering wheel and the pedals, and you just get into a mobile living room. But we are quite far away from that, despite, you know, I think what people are starting to hope for, seeing these level two and level three features rolled out and tested.
Okay, so we've got a sense, and it'll certainly, as you say, be a while before we're on that rolling living room.
Yes.
in the back. So this technique that you call instantaneous crowdsourcing fits into all of this discussion of self-driving vehicles and safety. How does it fit in?
So up to this point, all of those levels that I've described assume that the person goes from driving the car entirely themselves to slightly less and less attention paid to the road as we get better autonomy, better artificial intelligence. But even this breakdown assumes that it will still be the person in the car who is ultimately responsible for doing something about the critical event that comes up if it's a level three car, or are overseeing the navigation if it's in level two, kind of fancy cruise control mode. Now, the problem with that is we are very distractible beings. So we will back away from paying attention faster than the autonomy can actually handle it. And you get this, like you mentioned, like driving long periods of time, right? Where you're staring at the road for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, and you just glaze over. And that's bad enough. But now when you believe that the car is just going to take care of it, kind of gives you this internal narrative that it's okay to not pay attention. And the last time it probably worked, I reached for something in the passenger seat, and then eventually I checked my phone. And, you know, in the Arizona accident, it was somebody staring down at their lap, paying too much attention to their phone to intervene. And what we know from thinking about how humans interact with computers is that we're not good when you surprise us. You can't just say, you know, suddenly, here's something you have to pay attention to. Oh, also, it's an incredibly stressful situation that's too complex.
And you've been reading a book or doing whatever.
And you've been reading a book. You don't even know that you're on a highway exit or whatever the scenario happens to be. So now you have to look up, page that all back in, and then make a reasonably complex decision in a moment's notice. And even if you can do that, you're probably not ready to page everything back in.
Okay.
And certainly for the everyday motorist, this is going to be considerably more challenging than I think people have it in mind when they start using these features.
So this project you're working on tries to address that gap, that problem.
Exactly. So in work that was recently published just last year, we have the first way to combine multiple people's input to outperform what any person could possibly accomplish on a low-level task. So, you know, imagine grabbing the wheel and steering left around an obstacle. So we can do that level of task faster than your nervous system itself can respond.
Building that into the computer controlling the car.
Exactly. We call that instantaneous crowdsourcing. So we have a crowd of people, multiple people, who we can draw in to help with this task, and we can actually collectively act faster than we could alone. And we're using this to hand off control of these control of the car in critical events that just suddenly pop up, and the system, the driving the car, realizes, I don't know what's going on here. We now can intervene with someone who is a professional driver in, you know, imagine a call center, kind of like what was backing OnStar when GM had OnStar in vehicles. And so now we can actually potentially deal with this request faster than the driver in the car ever could. The hope would be that we could have professional drivers who are experts at switching contexts and experts at thinking about situational awareness on the road because they've been experienced drivers. So maybe truck drivers, you know, you hear a lot about autonomous trucks coming onto the market and kind of changing the work and employment landscape for long-haul truck drivers. You know, these are people who also have a lot of road experience. So we can start to think about, and my team has been doing a little bit of this, think about how using that expertise in a different way could keep, you know, daily commuters more safe.
Walter Lisecki is an assistant professor of computer science and engineering at the University of Michigan, working on autonomous vehicle research that combines human and artificial intelligence. Fascinating work. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Thanks so much for having me on.